If a person was named to reflect their charisma, Pam Starr would have the perfect fit. Pam is partner in Crocker & Starr Wines, located in St. Helena, California, making exceptional Cabernet Franc, Sauvignon Blanc, and Cabernet Sauvignon. She's not only the partner, though, she's also the winemaker. We spoke with Pam at the historic Dowdell property in St. Helena, which gave us the perfect backdrop for talking about the love of all things wine. We are here with Pam Starr of Crocker & Starr. How are you doing, Pam?
I'm doing really well. How are you, Ray?
I'm excellent. What a great day. It's a beautiful day. We're in this incredible building. You got this lovely pooch, and we have you here on mic, finally.
On the mic, and it is a nice day. It's not raining right now. It's sunny outside. We've got a great view of the vineyard and the old Victorian house, and we're sitting here in this covered courtyard to the 1870s brandy house. Doesn't get any better.
Tell me a little bit about the property we're at then, the Victorian house and this building. What's the history of it?
Well, welcome to the very special and private Crocker estate. I'll back up a little bit and tell you that Charlie Crocker and I met in 1997. I was making wines for Mary Novak over at Spotswood. And I sort of followed the soil across town, and he and I started having a conversation about property and history and resurrection. Next thing you know, we went into a partnership, and I applied all kinds of organic farming to this gorgeous 100-acre property. And he bought the property in 71 and resurrected the old stone winery, which was called Stone Place, and unfortunately it's a house now. Then he's preserved, as you can see around you, the elements he's preserved. This old brandy house is in still great shape, and the old original headers are in here. And so this estate really was an active winemaking, brandy making, fruit and nut family home in the 1870s.
That's just incredible. So, you know, and as I look at it, we're looking at walls on the side that are, what, a couple of feet thick of stone.
Yes.
And this, I don't know if you call this a vault-style ceiling, but it's a monster. And it feels like it could be, almost be a cellar in its own way, just because of the character in it.
I wish it was a cellar. I'm still a vagabond winemaker. I have to rent space down the street because there's no room for the barrels and tanks here.
That's a shame. It would be kind of fun. So what you do is, as you said, you bring high-end clients back here, and this is where you do tastings?
This estate is really private. The family has been incredibly gracious. I mean, Charlie really has opened the doors so that people could understand what Crocker & Starr Winery is all about. And it's the resurrection of this 1870s property. We're all about organics. And, of course, this project was started by a winemaker, so it's very winemaker-focused. So vines, seeing the vines and tasting the wines are critical mass for me to be able to tell a story. And over the years, since I started Crocker & Starr, we've been able to bring, you know, sort of media back here, some of our distributors, very VIP personnel. Sometimes we'll do a fundraiser. So it's an extremely limited property. Right now, I'm very pleased that we are now situated, the Crocker & Starr Winery office headquarters is situated on the vineyard, not part of this old estate. You were there. It's a gorgeous, we call it the garden at 700. And of course, Charlie has brought elements of this old estate to that site so that we could share the history of the property without trying to coordinate a very private space.
It's a nice setup over there, and as I was saying to Mimi, it has almost sort of an Italian feel to it. I mean, that's how it struck me, with the open doors and the open feel to it.
It's really how it's supposed to be. I think Charlie's vision is, he had this vision of really being a farmer, a viticulturist, you got your dogs with you, and you've been out maybe hunting deer that have been eating your vines, and you come into this very cute little stone house, kind of your hunting, tasting lodge, you kick your dirty boots off, and you know, pull the thief out and grab a sample from the barrel, and so it's a very romantic picture, and I think the way that the stone house has come together, the elements of that story, you can almost sit there and visualize just walking in from hanging out in the vineyard all day and then tasting the wines that your grapes make.
Well, let's go back a bit. In May, we had done a podcast that was dedicated to women, not necessarily women winemakers, but women in the business. And I discover half the time I'm out here, the people I interview are women. There's a lot of women in this business, and I don't think people realize that, and even more so women winemakers. So where was it at this point that you decided this is the kind of direction you wanted to go in the life, to be in wine?
Well, I don't think that women were a leader of anything in the wine business when I jumped into the wine business.
Which was around when?
1984. I thought I was going to go to dental school.
Well, there's a contrast for you.
Yeah. I'm telling you, yeah, my dad had a really hard time figuring out that I had a real job for about 10 years. And then he kind of gave up. My father is a very old-fashioned, old-world retired orthopedic surgeon. So science and business, those are the things he understands. This is a lifestyle business, and the lifestyle of this business was just booming, starting its boom era when I entered in the 80s. And so here I am, 28, 9 years later, and the business has changed a lot. It's really, thank goodness. When I started, I didn't speak tractor. I didn't know how to kick a tire and talk to farmers. That wasn't part of my education. There weren't a lot of women around leading up the charge. I think women in marketing were kind of leading the charge for the wine business because they knew how to bring a sort of a sex appeal in a very high business fashion to the business of selling wine. And so I was in a man's world. I think all women are in a men's world. And we really, you know, men and women, we need each other, we interact. And I really don't think that, you know, being a female actress or a male actor, a female winemaker or a male winemaker makes you better or worse. I think we bring such spice to life. And it's great that we do have an incredible rock star crowd of women winemakers in the business. I'm not just a winemaker. I didn't know I had business in me, but after creating and crafting wines and designing wines from a vineyard, I actually had to put on my business head. And you'd think that my business partner, Charlie Crocker, who comes from banking and capital investment, would sort of run the roost on that. But our agreement was that he didn't want to run another business. So All of that had to come from me. And it's really, I think, graduated my winemaking and vine work to a whole nother level. Becoming a proprietor and running a business and, you know, making 10-year business plans and changing up your numbers, running a small crew of three people, I believe I've become even a better winemaker because of the entire business head that I've put on.
Do you feel there are times when you're getting pulled away too much from the winemaking, where there's just the necessity of signing the check or kicking the tire or whatever need to be done?
I believe that, yes, I have been pulled away at times, critical times, and instead of sacrificing my winemaking or the grape growing, I've actually sacrificed my personal life. That's been the hardest thing to manage as a businesswoman, winemaker, leader of the band. And in fact, I'm changing that up. I've got some really great people working for me now, and I'm just in the process of shifting that pull so that I can focus more in on just winemaking and grape growing and bringing in people who can help with the business. Now that I've created it, Crocker & Starr has been in existence for over 10 years. We celebrated the release of our first Cabernet Sauvignon of the second decade of our company. How great is that, really? And so now I've put on my marketing head and had to sort of update and remake my logo and my speak about my company. So as the beginning of our second decade as Crocker & Starr Winery, our logo of the brand is just the badge, Crocker & Starr, with the beautiful ampersand. And we have actually translated that sort of arched logo onto a two-dimensional paper where Jim Cross really, you know, put some moves to it so it looks like the label's floating, but yet it's wrapped around a bottle. So it's a good beginning to the second decade. I'm really excited about this. Our wines have gotten nothing but better and better and better. Took about 5-7 vintages for the old vines to really suck up the organic farming. Stone Place was a blend when I first started Crocker & Starr Winery, and it has become 100% the 27-year-old Cabernet vines. And we have another wine coming online here. I've planted 5 really fancy pants selections of Cabernet Sauvignon in beautiful soils, different rootstocks.
Is that going to be on the label, Fancy Pants?
Yeah, Fancy Pants is definitely going to be in there. That's my marketing speak.
I like that. Yeah.
Yeah, the wood I got from Boucher Vineyard and from Jenkins and some other selections that I can't mention. And I really think that Cabernet Sauvignon, I'm going to have either grow the Stone Place Cabernet Sauvignon so they'll either love each other or I've got another Cabernet up my sleeve. I'm very excited about it.
It's very cool. You can see it on your face. Is everything estate, or are you leasing any?
Almost everything's estate. The Crocker & Starr Winery is a tripod. I developed three wines. Third wine I developed was Sauvignon Blanc, and I couldn't capture the design I wanted 100% from this estate. We're in St. Helena. The Sauvignon Blanc I planted is what is in what I would call very early ripening soil. It's clay loam, so once we get to the latter part of the season, the clay particles will fight for the water and win over the vine, so that sort of shortens our season. And I wanted a little bit of cooler climate, so I planted the other half of the Sauvignon Blanc down at the Hyde Las Trancas Vineyard in Napa, in soil that's kind of like chocolate cake. It crumbles apart. It's colder.
Where physically is that vineyard? I'm trying to picture that.
The Hyde Las Trancas Vineyard is on the corner of Trancas and Silverado Trail on the east side of Napa proper.
Okay. I got a kind of a rough idea what you're talking about. Okay. But just wanted to kind of get a picture of that. It's fun when you talk to people and then, you know, you're on the estate, but you're not always on the exact property where the grapes are grown. And when you get to see them, like, oh, I know them.
Right. Well, you are, for most of the wines I make here, you are on that property with the vines. So that's the Sauvignon Blanc takes a little bit more explanation because it's not 100% from here. Other than that, the 27-year-old Cabernet vines, the old Sea Clone, it's right outside the door. The Cab Franc is right outside, straight out north of the Victorian home here. We have a diversity of soils that come from the Nook that's made from Mayacamas Mountains and Spring Mountain. And we have sort of alluvial washing profiles, a couple gravel streaks. And then as you get to the sort of middle eastern half of the vineyard, we have soils that pick up, that come through the hourglass of St. Helena.
The hourglass, I never thought about it that way.
Yeah, a little pinch.
Yeah. So you have the Sauvignon Blanc, you have the Cab Franc, and then you have the Cabernet.
Right.
And is the Cabernet 100% Cabernet?
It is. It's 100% Cabernet Sauvignon. The Franc has a little bit of either Malbec or Petit Verdot in it, maybe 3%. The 2008, which I brought down here on the table, is 3% Malbec and 0.5% Petit Verdot. It doesn't say it on the back because it's mostly Franc.
I was just looking at the back. I wasn't looking for what it said.
Oh, sure. I know you were looking for my secrets.
And you said you have something else that'll be coming online here soon.
I do. It's probably not for the general public. We started a membership here with Crocker and Star. We're sitting in what is the family has named the Casali. The Casali is sort of a Italian slang for party farmhouse. Above on the ceiling, of course, is our Casali man. He looks like he's definitely ready for a party. He's got grapes in one hand, and there's a dragonfly flying above his head, and so we have started this membership so that we could offer our sommelier assistance to our members. People get emails all the time, and people come back and say, well, gee, I didn't pick up my Franc, and we have very small production, so it's very hard to go back and offer somebody a library wine. So we're just making sure that those people who have been loyal to us, that we remain loyal to them. So we've created the Casali Club, and I bottled 50 cases of Malbec that I grew and planted and grew on this property that will go with the Casali man, will be on the label, and that'll be specifically for our members.
That's nice. That's a great idea. And especially now because Malbec's become so popular with people, you know, it's just kind of nice to have that out there. But that's something you're never planning on, at least at this point, planning on making available outside of that commercially.
At this time, no. I really didn't plant very much of it. The wood did not come from Argentina. The wood came from a place in the south of France where Malbec actually grows. Cahors is the name of the region where Malbec grows, and I think that's kind of located in the close to the Basque country of France, and it makes for a very different flavor profile. So, I believe that the Malbec here is very racy. The color is interesting. It's like the color crayon in the big Crayola box where you pick it out, and it's very fluorescent, but it's very dark at the same time. It's a beautiful color of wine. The Malbec makes a beautiful color.
As far as the future goes, what are you thinking? Are you planning on expanding in any other way? Do you want to grow it a little bit? Do you want to kind of keep consistent to what you're talking about, just the three?
I started Crocker & Star with 100 cases in 97, and we are a three-wine profile equaling 2,400 cases. Half of that is Sauvignon Blanc, so the reds still comprise very small, limited quantities. And I have planted vines to expand. One of the expansion ideas I have, and you saw this earlier when you stopped by the garden at 700, There's a crimson clover field that we've planted. It's organic, and we've got a bee box out there right now. Marcy Gratz, our business coordinator, is making sure that the bees have things to eat while the flowers bloom. And I'm hoping that in that space in the not-too-distant future is a bricks-and-mortar winery. I hope to move from custom crush environment, which I've been very grateful to be in. I've had lots of assistance, and move on to the property 100%. So I think those are pretty lofty goals that will allow me to do some more creative wine making with some grape varieties that I haven't actually attempted to do some interesting winemaking techniques with. So that will expand the 3-wine profile maybe to 4 to 6 wines. Oh, here's our lofty Handsome Hound. Bye, Handsome Hound. He's a very handsome boy.
And he's well taken care of, I think.
He is very well taken care of. He is a wire hair pointing Griffon. He's got a gorgeous sort of auburn red head and a brown and white body. And he's a very happy boy.
I'll just have to look at Facebook because we will have pictures of them.
Perfect.
Of him, right?
Perfect.
Pictures? Good. Just
okay.
Making sure.
Yeah.
So as you stand with the small tasting room you have now, and this is just speculation, I guess, but it's such a challenge nowadays to do anything winery-wise in the Valley. That is something that you think you'd be able to pull off, I mean, to actually have a full-fledged...
I do. Charlie and I went into the city 5 years ago now. I can't believe it, 5 years. And we went for an application to build on the parcel of land that is the very most western edge of the Crocker Estate. And unfortunately for us, we found out that the city would not recognize that Charlie owns 6 contiguous parcels, and they wouldn't allow the home, this Victorian home and the old stone winery, to act as the home for the entire 6 parcels. So we would have had to go to the city and ask for a variance, all politics and whatever.
Yeah.
And so our problems were sort of semi-solved when Charlie found that the last standing farmhouse right across the street here was going to be decomposed. And he cut it into redwood framing, this house that was built in 1918, picked it up and plonked it onto the parcel of land that is the most western edge where I would love to build a winery, where the bee box is and the crimson clover. That sort of changed up our lives. We now have a house on that parcel. We're operating Crocker and Star headquarters from there, and we'll see if the city will then allow us a homesteading permit. So there may be hope in the future to make it be really easy. Who knows? I think people would like us to be here. I think the town of St. Helena knows Crocker and Star Winery exists, and they know that we exist on the property. They know that we like to share the vineyard experience, so we do have private vineyard experiences where we have our members come and they can touch the vines and experience firsthand how these vines were designed. So I believe that there is a lot of hope. I believe that we will have this permit and we will have a winery.
In the process of all this, this is Napa, you're making Cap Franc and Cabernet? Is that what you are? Are you a Cabernet drinker? Is that your favorite? Or do you have anything special you really enjoy drinking yourself?
Well, I love wine, and I love wine of the world. That jingly sound in the background is the only... I've only had 2 sons in my life. One of them had 4 legs and lived to be 17. His name was Herschel, and Griffin has 4 legs, and he's only 2 and a half. My passion for this business grew. Every time another layer unfolded, I'd kind of dive headfirst into it. And I've only been married for 3 and a half years. My husband and I got married on this property out in the back where the beautiful old walnut orchard is. And there's a chapel that was built in 1910 by Charlie Crocker's great aunt. And it's part of the chapels of San Francisco, the history of chapels in San Francisco.
Oh, wow.
And I'll show it to you later if you'd like.
Yeah.
And so in my life of making wine, I have been collecting wine. And this is a very long answer to your very short question, but I think if I was deprived of any one experience of a grape variety, I would be frustrated and sad. My go-to wines are Cabernets and Pinot Noirs. I do have a lofty collection of old Bordeaux and some Burgundies, and I had kind of jumped into some Italian wines as well. I love our Napa Valley Cabernets. We have a very diverse land here in Napa, and I think by drinking a lot of the old world wines, I see that our potential here is undiscovered. We don't know all the layers that we can unfold. We've definitely established turf. We know that we can make great Cabernets in Rutherford and great Cabernets in Oakville and great Cabernets in St. Helena. I think our land is still yet to continue to be unfolded and diversified. So I have some Cabernets, quite a few from this valley. And I even have some of the wines that were made back in the 60s. Louis Martini had some Barbera that they grew, and those are eye-opening, shocking wines. So I think that being in the land of Cabernet, yes, Cabernet is a go-to, but being inspired to make great Cabernets, I think you have to be able to drink Tempranillo and Grenache and Pinot Noir and experience Sagrantino. Life is too short to not be inspired by all those that are around you.
That's what it is when you're a winemaker. It's the depth, it's the broadness of what you get to try and how you use that, right, when you're making your wine. I mean, you think about that experience when you drink these different wines.
You do. I believe right before I go into harvest, I do try to drink older wines and younger wines and remember those experiences going into harvest for the extraction. Our world has changed so much in winemaking. When I first started this business, you didn't have a lot of tools. You either made a really good wine and you didn't have the opportunity to clean it up afterwards if you made a mess of it. The French have brought over tools that they've been using for decades. You know, they've got concentrators and reverse osmosis machines. And I'd say that there are tools there that help to protect your capital investment. I don't believe that there are tools that they should be used to sort of direct and design your wine. So the crafting really still is old-fashioned, but I have to say that it's really nice to have backup tools if you have to, you know, protect your capital investment.
Sure. I've heard both a couple of male and female winemakers make the comment that they feel, generally speaking, that women may have a better, more sensitive palate than men. That's, again, a generalization. But do you have any thoughts on that at all?
Well, not being a man, it's hard to know what a man tastes or anybody else tastes.
I've noticed that you're not, so yeah, right.
I do think that women and men have different chemical and hormonal structure makeup. And so, yes, generally we're going to perceive different components, and some of those components are going to be more acute. In general, I do believe that women are more sensitive to some of the very acute smells. Oh, there you see. He's like, don't forget about me. I'm a guy. I can smell stuff. Look at my nose. And I think I've come to that conclusion because women who are pregnant, their palates change. And there are smells that they can't stand. So there must be something to it. Although when it comes to crafting and creating great wines, I don't think anybody ever thinks about it.
No, I guess that would be a different conversation, but I've heard this before, so that's why I wanted to bring it up.
If women are so much more sensitive or have an acute palate, how come we don't have a parallel to Robert Parker? Now, Jancis Robinson has an amazing palate, but why isn't she out there making a statement with her? She's an educator more than she is somebody who is a reviewer or a critic, right?
Right.
So Robert Parker has established himself as a critical reviewer with an acute palate. I'm just wondering where that female is.
Well, I think that goes back. No, wait, I'm doing the interview, not you.
Are you sure?
That's a really good question.
You've talked to way more people than I have, and I really would like to know where that
person
is.
Nobody's ever brought that up, and that's in its own way disturbing, but it does come back to who was I talking to earlier, you know, using the statement of, well, it's a man's world, and of course we're changing that. And I think that's part of it. It hasn't changed yet. Not the right person doesn't step forward yet, but there's a need for that. You're right. And, you know, the bottom line is it's not about your sex. It doesn't matter who you are. It's a matter about that. What's in the bottle, what you've done, what you've created. I've asked every winemaker about this, so I'm going to ask you too. Corks or caps, do you have an opinion?
Well, corks seem to be the best and the worst closure in the same object. The cork has preserved so many bottles of wine for 100 years or 50 years. Example, I just turned 50 in December. And I celebrated at Burns Steakhouse in Florida, where they are famed for great old bottles of wine in the cellar. And they don't even have everything cataloged. And we started off Bordeaux night with a 1918 Magnum of Girard LaRose. And it was unbelievably perfect. The wine didn't even fall apart by the end of the night. And the cork was in that bottle. So, what do you say to that? I don't know of a bottle of wine with a screw cap on it that we've cracked the neck on and had expectations of longevity. However, white wines today are fresher, crisper, Albarinos, Sauvignon Blancs, and with expectations of maybe lasting a couple years. I have been an advocate of a different product. I have been an advocate of tradition, so I put a foam-filled binder into my Sauvignon Blanc bottle. It is an object called the Nomacork. So it's a high-density foam, and they put it into a sleeve that has pores on the outside to emulate the suction cups of a cork so that it adheres to the sides of the bottle, not just like one of those plastic plugs. This cork actually seals for about 7 years. The company Nomacork can measure the transfer of oxygen through the foam and how long it's going to take. So being a traditionalist, loving toys, I have nothing like an exquisite screw pull in your hand to, you know, that perfect penetration of the foam or the cork and having it, you know, pop out and that the whole sound. So I chose that path, although I have had really good experiences with some screw cap wines. It's juries out. We shouldn't just make a transformation to screw caps. And we certainly shouldn't make a transformation to these foam-filled binders because they only last for 7 years. And our Cabernets and our Pinot Noirs are going to last longer than that. So we're still obligated to use traditional cork. Hopefully we can test for the TCA or the sappy characters that extract into wine.
Are you familiar with the glass enclosure?
I've seen it.
Yeah, I've seen it too. It's interesting. I've seen only on whites.
It's interesting. It really is. I believe that had we not had such an upset with so many bad corks, we'd still be using corks everywhere.
Yeah, that makes sense. For our listeners, how could they learn about you? Where could they learn about Crocker & Starr Wines?
Crocker & Starr is on the web. We have a website, www.crockerstarr.com. We are Crocker & Starr Winery on Facebook. We're not tweeters yet. We're working on it. You can call us at the office, 707-967-9111. You can talk to Mark, Marcy, Mimi, myself, and come and see us at 700 Dowdell Lane by appointment only. So we hope to express ourselves to you through tasting our wines and showing our vines, and hopefully you'll share back with us your experiences of tasting our wines out there somewhere in the world.
Well, thanks very much for your time, and thank you for bringing us back to this beautiful estate. I appreciate your seeing us.
You're welcome. It was good to see you, Ray.
Learn more about Crocker & Starr Wine on the web at crockerstarr.com.